Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Panning the Stream. My name's Dan Reichert. I'm sitting at the table here with my wife, Bianca Reichert. How are you doing, honey?
Reichert's at the table.
That was the working title for this podcast.
I have a question for you.
Yeah, what's
before
up?
Before we get started.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Are you part of a special secret club?
I've been part of several secret clubs before.
It's called the Pen 15 Club.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And if you're in it, then I have to write Pen 15 on your arm or something.
That's going to look like penis.
Oh, you figured it out.
Yeah, I used to be in that club.
Hey, Dan, can you spell I cup?
Oh, I remember this one. Okay, this was
big in my school. This was other age.
This was ICUP.
Yeah, and that and making weird moany sex noises. That was more bigger in like seventh grade when I guess all the guys started hitting puberty and they thought it would be really funny during English class to just start moaning like they're having an orgasm.
And with what context?
Literally no context. Like just non-sequitur sexual moaning. And it would make everyone very uncomfortable, especially Mrs. Wojcik, who, you know, this amazing teacher. She had to, like, what could you possibly do in that situation?
Well, we would do the thing, not so much me, because I was always way too ashamed to draw this much attention to myself, but...
ashamed.
We'll get into it. but I was always amused when other kids would get into these wars to see who could yell penis the loudest. And so it would be, like, in class or whatever, and, like, one guy would be like, penis. And then the guy next to him would be, penis. And they would just keep going until one of them. It's like playing chicken with the word penis.
It's so funny. As an adult looking back, a lot of this stuff was very homoerotic.
Oh, it all has to do with penises and things like that.
But I will say screaming the word penis is pretty funny.
It's very funny because that's a silly thing to scream
in
polite society.
So how loud? What was the loudest?
Oh, some people just had no shame whatsoever and would just scream it and like win immediately because like you couldn't beat it if you tried.
Oh, boy.
We are talking about penis because that is what the show we're covering today looks like. If you look at the letters and numbers, it is referring to that fabled Pen 15 club. The show is called Pen 15.
The show is called Pen 15, and the fact that it looks like the word penis is a realization that my father came to only after watching the entirety of the first season, and he excitedly told me over the phone that, hey, Bianca, you know, the title of the show kind of looks like the word penis.
He cracked the code.
Yeah.
He figured it out. All the Easter eggs, the clues they dropped along the season. Yes. So Pen 15, we normally don't cover comedies on this because, you know, it's not necessarily the best listen. And like, hey, remember that joke that was funny? Remember this joke that was funny? So we're not really going to be going beat by beat or episode by episode of the show. But I think we both enjoyed it so much that we just want to do. I mean, it seems like it's pretty popular, but we want to do whatever we can to kind of help spread the word about an enthusiastic recommendation.
It's really funny. And it's also, I think, maybe the only show, at least the only show worth watching, that harkens back to this very specific era, which is my era of being in seventh grade. I was a little bit younger than these women. There's probably like a 5-year difference, but it's still like all the references ring true to my childhood and stuff.
Yeah, and I'm a little bit older than these girls were, but it feels like it really hits that sweet spot of like that late 90s, early 2000s, like when, you know, both of us were in school. Mm-hmm. And so a little bit of context if you haven't seen the show. So this is made by Maya Erskine and Anna Conkle, who are 31-year-old comedians, actresses, writers that are playing the 13-year-old versions of themselves in the year 2000. And you talk about nostalgia, and it's so cool because, like, growing up, you'd see all sorts of stuff where it's like, oh, this is like a 70s throwback. This is like an 80s nostalgia. Or even you see it all the time with stuff like Stranger Things and all that where it's like, hey, remember the 80s and stuff? And it's always the most, like, obvious, remember Ghostbusters? And do you remember Michael Jackson and all this stuff? And this one not only nails this, like, 2000 sweet spot that has not really – like, we're just now getting far enough away from it that we can do some real nostalgia for it. Mm-hmm. But it's not all like, hey, remember Britney Spears, Spice Girls, you know, Pogs or whatever. It like nails every little element of it. Yeah.
I think maybe that's because unlike the 80s and the 90s and the 70s, I don't know why I went in that order. I feel like the early 2000s, or I guess the year 2000 to 2009, doesn't really have a set identity like previous decades have, at least from our perspective. And I think maybe that has to do with the fact that we're still so close to it.
Yeah.
And also, and someone made this point, I read it somewhere and I thought it was a really good point. Like, we don't have an actual name for that decade that is easily, like, that we could easily refer to.
I feel like people are starting to say, like, the 2000s. And if they say that, you know, versus the 2010s. I think that's how you would probably
delineate it. I don't really hear the 2010s a lot. That's something I don't hear. But I do hear the 2000s, and I know what the reference is, what time period it's referencing. But
maybe it's because we're still in the 2010s, technically, right, for one more year here.
Yeah, but unlike the 90s and the 80s, which is like a clear thing that could immediately conjure up some ideas in your head, you know, it's the early 2000s don't have that. But I will say, watching this show and looking back, I think the defining thing about that era, and maybe you disagree, was just the beginnings of the internet and discovering the internet and working around it. And that's more of a technological thing, but that had such, you know, it would eventually have such a huge bearing on culture. And then obviously outside of that, there's like the, you know, obviously major events occurred in the early 2000s.
I would say for me, I look at the 90s as kind of like the early stages of, like, you know, first getting AOL, like getting the discs in the mail and the AIM stuff, which we'll talk about that in a bit here. And then the 2000s, I see the internet growing to more of what it is now.
Like, I see that in the later, like in maybe 2006 to 2010, I feel like that's – but like the early 2000s, I feel like. And maybe that could just be because that's when I was using AIM. That's, you know, when I was 12 in 2004. Just to give you some context.
So I would have been, I would have turned 20 in 2004. Yeah. So I was in college at the time. But yeah, the 2000s are definitely when, like, the internet became a place to go. Like, even like on 9/11, it was like you could go, the internet was far enough along to where like CNN.com and stuff was being updated, you know, throughout the day. And that's where everyone was going because you're not waiting for the newspaper. You know, you're watching the live coverage on the news, obviously, but the internet played a big role in that.
Maybe I was just too, it was at the point where the internet wasn't a necessary part of your life yet.
No.
And it wasn't necessarily ubiquitous. And I was also probably too young to be able to just go and use the internet whenever I wanted. So I think it was a combination of that. And then once I finally was able to, like, independently go use the internet, which would be around 2003, 2004, which is probably when I started using it, you know, outside of school type of things.
Yeah.
And started using AIM a lot and stuff.
And a huge change obviously came in, like, the later part of that decade where, you know, phones and everything, like smartphones became a deal. Like, when did you get your first cell phone?
I got my first cell phone, I want to say I was in high school. Maybe I was a sophomore in high school. For some reason, I can't really remember what my first cell phone was, but that's probably just because I rarely used it. I mean, I remember T9 and all that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Trying to text people. And then I was pretty late on the iPhone game, the smartphone thing in general. I had a regular phone. What is the word for that?
Flip phone.
Yeah, I had a flip phone until 2014.
Okay.
So I got on the iPhones pretty late. And then once I finally got on them, I was like, oh my gosh, taking pictures, it just makes everything so much easier. Especially for me, I had an iPad, so I wouldn't say the music stuff was life-changing, but having GPS at the ready all the time, I feel like that's extremely useful.
I remember my friend getting an iPhone in college for the first time, and he showed it to me at a bar, and he was like, check this out. If I want to get, you know, delivery or whatever, I just search this here, it pops up, I press this button, and it just seemed like magic. And then when you hear about things like, oh, it's got a front-facing camera and you can do FaceTime, like, that felt like real future stuff for sure. Whereas, like, the time period of this show, like 2000, is... I don't think we were quite, like, the internet was coming around, but it wasn't full on, like, oh, this is changing the way our day-to-day lives, even away from the computer, you know, operates.
Yeah,
you know?
We were still kind of feeling it out.
Yeah, like, Google was brand new at that point. I think Google started around 99 or 2000. So it was still, like, kind of the early parts.
Right. But this show isn't entirely about the internet. In fact, there's only really one episode that wades into the AIM stuff, but it's even the behavior of the girls is something that I could relate to so much. Just being really goofy, being kind of an outcast, wanting to embrace your different identity. Although I will say, when I was their age, the age that they portray, when I was in seventh grade, I was definitely tried to be angsty and like really went hard on the, like, oh, all these preppy people.
You were dark and moody. You were the Aleister Black of junior high.
I mean, I still wear dark colors usually, but I was like wearing black and like fishnet and dungeon pants, as I would call them, because they look like the wall of a dungeon, and, you know, fishnet stockings and a lot of Hot Topic and a lot of just thinking I was better than everyone else, which... It was weird because there was that feeling of arrogance, but then it was also coupled with this extreme self-loathing that has persisted to this day. But it was kind of, and I don't know if you ever went through this phase, but when I was in seventh grade is when I started, you know, trying to push the limit of what I could do and trying to do rebellious things like stealing and, you know, hanging out with older guys. And, you know, it was, I feel like what I did in seventh grade was what a lot of people kind of experiment with in high school, maybe. So I got it early.
Okay.
And looking back on it, you know, you think you're so mature when you're 12 years old. And, you know, I look like a woman. I hit puberty when I was 12 and I grew these massive tits. So I look like a young adult, which made things, you know, worse in a way. And you have this feeling like you're so mature. But looking back, 12 years old, when I think about it now, I mean, that's less than half of what I am now. I mean, that's like so close to being a child. Like you were five years ago, I was 22. If I was 12, 5 years ago would be 7. Like it's just so young and you think you know so much. And, you know, looking back, I totally understand the limitations my parents wanted to put on me in terms of where I could go. And it was just completely reasonable. But you're an idiot asshole kid who wants to experiment.
Every kid's a complete idiot and thinks everything's the end of the world.
Right.
And yeah, when I was like 12, I was probably right in the middle of like I had just left Catholic school because like the bullying stuff got really, really bad. Mm. And it was just rough. And I went to public school.
So seventh grade was your first year in public school?
Sixth grade was. So maybe I was like 11-ish, you know, 11, between 11 and 12. Mm-hmm. When I halfway through fifth grade, I went to public school.
Okay.
And that at least sixth grade, once I moved, I started to kind of get happier and mm-hmm. feel like I was figuring out, like, I knew it was better. Mm-hmm. I knew public school was way better than Catholic school for me. But I didn't, I definitely got that sense of superiority and that dumb, misplaced confidence isn't the right word, but mm-hmm. like you described feeling like you're better than everyone. Like, I remember thinking I was just so above, like, oh, all these idiot kids and they're starting to drink and go to parties and all this stuff. And they're such idiots and I'm smarter and I'm funnier and I got better taste and everything. Like, mm-hmm. just real kind of cocky shit. But at the same time, yeah, intense insecurities and, you know, not being able to talk to anyone, total, like, social anxiety doesn't even, like, begin to touch it. Like, mm-hmm. I was afraid. You at least went for, like, an identity. You tried to, you know, you had a look and you were being your own person. My whole thing was trying to not be noticed ever. I wanted to wear clothes that would make me disappear. I would not want anyone to look at me. I didn't want any pressure to talk to anyone. I never did anything socially mm-hmm. outside of school. I don't think I talked to a girl until I was 24 years old. Mm-hmm. You know, I was, I've told you before, but if I was running late to school, we're talking like maybe when I was like 16, so this is like high school, I would park my car in the subdivision across the street from my high school, and I would wait until the passing period between first class and second class, because I knew if I walked in even 30 seconds late, if I walked in at 8 o'clock and 30 seconds to my first hour class, mm-hmm. people would turn and look at me. And I was so terrified of the idea of anyone even just paying attention to me that I would just wait for an hour in my car.
Yeah, that's something that a lot of kids, I feel like, probably, you know, are burdened with, that feeling that, oh, everyone's looking at me and stuff. And then as you get older, you start to realize, you know, I put it this way. When I was a kid and I would get so nervous about giving presentations in front of the class,
yeah.
I would think about my response when other people gave presentations, which is to not pay attention at all.
Oh, no, you just zone out.
You completely zone out. So once I realized that no one's really paying attention to what I do, unless I do something totally bonkers, no one's really going to pay attention. That boosted my confidence a little bit. And then I started taking that into like everyday life where it's like, look, no one's going to pay attention to what I'm wearing. I don't really have to stress about this so much, you know?
Yeah.
And then by the time I was in high school, I wouldn't say that I was completely, you know, not susceptible to those thoughts, but I definitely had a little more confidence to the extent of like being able to have my own identity, knowing that I was different, but knowing that that doesn't make everyone else bad.
Right, yes.
That being said, I did, you know, kind of alienate myself from everyone and just hung out with teachers and read the New York Times during my break or whatever. But this era especially, I feel like when you look back on your life, you can identify certain periods that are characterized by like extreme turmoil and consequently a lot of growth. And seventh grade for me was definitely one of those periods.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely like this takes place 100% in seventh grade. And I read some interviews with Maya and Anna, and they were saying that it hasn't been renewed for season two yet. Mm-hmm. But if they do, they want to keep it perpetually in seventh grade like The Simpsons. So it's just like they're always that age. And so like yeah. it'd be hilarious if they're, you know, in their late 30s and still playing these 13-year-old characters.
I think it's worthy to note that they are in their 30s and they play seventh graders, but all their co-stars, all the other seventh graders are actual seventh graders.
Which I would have understood that okay, without you saying anything, I would have known that they were older, mm-hmm. but I still thought that they were like child actors until you pointed out like those girls have got to be way older. And yeah. I was like, really? And you'd see them next to some of the other like girls and stuff. And it's like, mm-hmm. okay, they're like 2 feet taller and they just look completely different.
They're taller and then they have more mature faces. I mean,
yeah, I mean, they do the braces and all that stuff. Yeah. There's only so much you can do.
But they do look very young.
They do a great job with it. They do a really good job.
Like, totally.
It's very clear that they remember how they used to act back then.
Totally. Like,
the way they talk, mm-hmm. the things they get hung up on and everything. It feels authentic. And I thought this was super interesting because I feel like there have always been a million stories of like dopey teenage guys, right. you know, like the American Pie type stuff, like right. high school, like from the guy perspective. I've seen a million of those. This is at least the first I've seen of what felt like kind of an authentic, like I kept asking you, like, is this ringing true? Is this, and you were like, oh yeah, this is
absolutely.
Totally.
And especially when you would see pieces of media that would have girls, like usually it would be more closer to eighth grade or high school that would be the youngest you would get. As far as shows or movies that star, you know, younger actresses. But usually those actresses, it would either be like, they would be stereotyped, they would be like a loser, and then there'd be the popular kids or whatever. And that definitely exists in this show, but it's a lot more nuanced and a lot more realistic because Anna and Maya aren't, they're not hated. Like, they make their class laugh, whatever. Yeah. They're obviously just different and best friends. When I was in seventh grade, my best friend and I were inseparable, my best friend Christina. It was a very similar dynamic in that way.
Now, did you do stuff like, you know, there's so many scenes, and I've always heard that this was a thing of people talking on the phone, like best friends talking on the phone mm-hmm. all the time. Like, they're laying in bed and both just talking, you know, for long periods of time mm-hmm. to each other. Did you do that with your close friends?
I don't remember talking to her on the phone a ton because we lived right around the block from each other.
Okay, so you hung out all the time.
Yeah, we were constantly hanging out. And then we would aim sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah.
The closest I came to that, because I've always, my entire life, hated talking on the phone more than anything. I can't stand it. But every Monday night, me and my friend Charlie, and we're talking like 98, 99, 2000, every commercial break during Monday Night Raw, mm-hmm. we would call each other and be like, oh man, you think they're going to do a title shot? Oh, did you see Triple H's promo? Like, oh yeah, I bet he was shooting. Like,
that's awesome.
Yeah, so it was every break. Like, oh, I can't believe they're putting Hardcore Holly in an IC title match. Like, that was it. But it mm-hmm. would just be like a 2 minute thing. It's like, all right, Raw's back on. Talk to you later. Mm-hmm. But the AIM thing, I definitely had a ton of that going on for sure.
One of my other favorite episodes from the season was the masturbation episode.
Yeah.
I thought that was so well done. I mean, so Maya discovers masturbation and that it feels good. And she proceeds to do it for like hours at a time.
Right. Like aggressively. Like,
yeah.
It goes kind of graphic with
this stuff. Goes super graphic. I mean, it's a little unnerving because even though you know they're 30-year-old women, they're still portraying children, so it's a little weird.
Yeah, it felt very weird.
But it's I thought it was a pretty accurate depiction of, like, discovering your body and all that stuff. And, like, somehow knowing inherently that it was wrong, that, it, you know, you shouldn't be caught doing it.
Yeah, like the grandfather stuff they did in that episode where she's terrified that, like, her dead grandpa is watching over us because he's dead. And the mom is like, oh, yeah, he's always watching you, always watching you. And I remember having that thought, too, of just like, oh, God, if this stuff is real, if, like, heaven and all that's real, is that mean, like, my grandparents are great? Grandparents can see me doing all this stuff. Like,
it's like when she goes to the bathroom or her bedroom or something to masturbate, she just says aloud, I'm gonna be in the bedroom for a really long time, don't come in. Something like that.
I was talking earlier about how it doesn't just go with the low-hanging obvious nostalgia fruit. And one of the things that got so right was I remember, like, Wild Things. Mm-hmm. There's an episode where they rent Wild Things mm-hmm. and get people together to watch it. And I never watched that with anyone, but I definitely remember that being a movie that was like, oh, especially among, like, guys that age, like, oh, Denise Richards, this scene, this is legendary. Yeah. Like, every guy made sure to watch Wild Things. But it didn't seem like porn, mm-hmm. So it's like you felt like you could rent it, you know, from Blockbuster mm-hmm. and not raise too many suspicions yeah. from your parents or whatever.
Yeah. This was the time period before porn was so easily accessible. So stuff right. like that would be like, especially if you're a kid, that would be the closest you can get to porn.
Totally. I've definitely told the story before about how I was terrified to look up porn on the internet at that age because I was certain that my parents, like, well, obviously they're older than me. They mm-hmm. bought the computer. They're smarter about this stuff. They can see every website I go to. I'm sure they're monitoring all this stuff. And now I think about that. Like, the idea of them knowing how to do any of that stuff is laughable.
Oh, yeah.
So, of course, I was, you know, taking pictures of my friend's Hustler on my Game Boy camera. Yeah. So, accessing it, that because I was too afraid. That, for sure, I knew my parents couldn't get to. Mm-hmm. There's no way they know how the internal memory of the Game Boy camera worked.
So, just to go a little further on this... porn on the internet, I feel like this era and then like prior to like Pornhub and stuff like yeah. that, trying to look up porn on the internet was pretty risky business, right? I mean, there was a lot of like viruses and pop-ups and stuff you could click. Maybe if you weren't especially technologically savvy and you just wanted to watch porn, it was easy to maybe ruin your computer, right?
There were a ton of pop-ups. I feel like I was always pretty computer savvy and, you know, I was a young boy and I've heard of porn on the internet before mm-hmm. and I kind of knew how to avoid that. I never mm-hmm. got like a bad virus or anything, but it was just kind of a giant pain in the ass mm-hmm. because even once I became confident enough to look at porn on my own computer, it was like there was no tube sites. You know, mm-hmm. obviously this is way before YouTube, so way before, you know, all the porn streaming tube sites. So it was always these sites you would go through and there were a billion of them mm-hmm. that would just be like, here's a giant grid of all these screenshots, and it's like you would click it and then it would bring you to a subpage with like three different 30-second clips you could download and it'd be like, all right, that part of the scene looks good, and so you do save as, so you had to download an
spend
actual
an hour
file.
Downloading it, it's yes. just the beginning part where they're talking.
Yeah. I made sure to do go middle or end, but then you would download, it took forever and it'd be 30 seconds, this incredibly compressed pixelated thing you'd mm-hmm. open up in Real Player. And yeah, it was a giant pain in the ass mm-hmm. for sure. But like, hey, it was still better than, you know, hiking around the woods hoping to find a treehouse and some like secret porn stash. And
now, when I was a kid, I never had an urge to look at porn. Granted, that might be because I'm a lady and I feel like we're less visually inclined. But I feel like there was a lot of value in using your imagination.
Oh, yeah. I did plenty of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that was usually when, like, I'm just zoning out in class and I'm just thinking of, like, a picture I saw of, like, Kathy Ireland or something. For some reason, I distinctly remember...
Kathy Ireland.
I distinctly remember sitting in tech class and there's this one picture from, like, Sports Illustrated bikini thing or whatever. Like, all right, yeah, Kathy Ireland. Just thinking about that for, like, an hour.
The only thing I know about Kathy Ireland is that she apparently designs furniture for Raymore and Flanagan now.
Okay.
I saw her in a commercial.
All right. She pivoted.
It's so weird because my dad always subscribed to Sports Illustrated, and when we would get the swimsuit editions in the mail, my brothers and I would fight over it because we like to draw pictures over the women and like give them mustaches faces and like Hitler mustaches and, you know, just stupid kid stuff.
Yeah.
Speech bubbles. And
yeah.
But it never even fazed me as a kid that people would, because to me they just look like really pretty girls. You know, in some cases, girls, like some of these women are 18. I think Kate Upton or whatever was 18 when she was in.
Oh, yeah.
The reason I remember that, let me just say as a brief aside, is because when she was on the cover of Sports Illustrated, that was the first time where I think I was like 19 or 20. And that was the first time someone younger than me, it was usually always my age group or older that was like, oh, here's a hot chick. But this is someone like, oh, here's a hot chick and she's younger than you. That was like the first time I was like, oh, maybe I'm getting old.
Oh, yeah. My dad said that moment for him mm-hmm. was because he's a big baseball fan. So the moment he got older than active players. Mm-hmm. And then he said after that was like, oh, my God, I'm older than coaches now.
Yeah.
And for me, it was wrestlers. As soon as I started hearing like, oh, you know, like Cody Rhodes and Xavier Woods and these guys are younger than me. It's like,
right.
Oh, man, I'm getting.
It's weird, right?
Yeah, yeah. And especially now, like. NXT guys that are like 22, 23 or whatever.
Yeah. So it was beyond my comprehension that people would look at these pictures in a sexual way. I mean, I know they were very, you know, beautiful women, but like it was to me, it was just women. Like to
right.
me, it was just, I can't imagine, you know, looking at something like that and be like, oh, I need to jerk off or whatever.
That's what the best guys think. I remember my grandma's husband, who has passed on, he used to have a Playboy subscription. Mm-hmm. And in the downstairs, so downstairs is where the NES was. And mm-hmm. so whenever I went over to their place, and I mean, it was, whether it was 1987 or 2000, it was an NES down there. That's
right.
all they had. So
mm-hmm.
it's like, all right, I guess I'm playing Ghosts and Goblins again. But the bathroom next to that room, he kept his Playboys there. He didn't even try to hide it. There was mm-hmm. like a mirror, and right underneath it, he would just have a stack of Playboys. And I remember every time I went in there just being like, not necessarily like, oh, I'm going to go in there and masturbate. That seemed way too risky. Mm-hmm. But it's like, oh, I could even, if I could just open up one page and just see, and I can just commit to memory and think about it later or whatever.
Take a picture with your Game Boy camera?
I didn't usually bring that. But like, I could definitely would sear into my brain. Like, mm-hmm. if there were images that were just like, oh, this is so hot.
Yeah.
But I was still so convinced that like, okay, this is all new to me. This whole like, you know, hitting puberty thing. So they probably, older people probably have all these things in place to detect if I have like fingerprint scanners or something. So I would be so terrified. I would try to use like the tips of my fingernails to turn the page so I wouldn't leave like prints and stuff.
Oh,
and
Lord.
Try to memorize every angle of like, okay, this issue was placed on top of this one at this angle. And they probably know, they probably have pictures to reference. And it's like, no, of course not.
So what was the logic of keeping porn magazines in the bathroom? Is because I've heard of that before. And I'm wondering, do people jerk off while they're taking a shit?
No, I don't think that's it. Honestly, like at least in this context that I'm thinking of, I think it was the fact that like it was Playboy. Playboy is, you know, but it's a tame. I wouldn't call it just like straight up. It's definitely not like hardcore porn or something.
Well, no, but when you're in that era, it was considered, you know, pornographic.
It was, but there was always, you know, Hustler and Penthouse and all that stuff mm-hmm. is way more like hardcore. And Playboy was, it did have like a long legacy of like, even though like I read it for the articles mm-hmm. as a joke, it's like there were really respected authors that were writing stuff in Playboy. So I would see that as like he probably put it there as reading material, but also you see pictures in between.
Well, I might buy it, but the thing is, I've heard of the keeping porn magazines in the bathroom before, so that's why I was curious about it.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe older generations were different. I definitely never had the idea of like, oh, I'm going to keep like porn stuff in the bathroom or whatever.
We keep a Magic the Gathering art book in our bathroom.
That's about the opposite of porn.
That's the opposite. Although it is, I mean, it's visually stimulating for sure. That art is amazing.
Yes,
I mean,
yes.
Holy cannoli.
Yes. So, yeah, it really nails all this stuff. Like,
Of your first cigarette.
Oh,
Your first dabbling into drugs. I mean, they have that. There's that one episode where they're like peer pressure is another thing they tackle.
Oh, yeah, in the garage where they get the chemical like inhaler stuff or whatever. The keyboard cleaner, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. They nail that stuff.
When I was a kid, I never smoked a cigarette. I smoked my first cigarette and my only cigarette, and I barely smoked it. I took one puff of it when I was like in my early 20s, and I was like, I can't believe people do this. This is fucking nasty.
I smoked one because I was supposed to do a PSA. So I got really into video production in high school. And so one of the assignments is we had to make a PSA. And of course, I made mine just as dumb as possible. So mine was like, you know, oh, it starts so innocently. And then I like, you know, would smoke a cigarette and be like, oh, yeah, I'll try this. Okay. I smoke a cigarette. And it goes, but you'll never know just how bad things will go. And it cuts to like, it says 3 months later. And it was like this black and white footage of me. And I'm pouring all these cigarettes into a giant cereal bowl. And I pour milk over it. And I take a giant spoon and I put a bunch of cigarettes in my mouth. I'm like, I'm just like eating it and chewing it. But like, it looked terrible. And I'm actually like chewing up these cigarettes for the shot. Maybe that's why I never had a desire to smoke, is because I chewed up a bunch of cigarettes before I really smoked. But yeah, like it covers a lot of that high school stuff. It going back to the AIM one, like that stuff, whenever they do tech in shows, I always feel like, especially video games, we've talked about it before, like in that 911 episode mm-hmm. and everything, it's like they always get it just completely wrong. Space Invader sound effects and everything. But with this one, like everything from the interface to the chat rooms, like it was so dead on. Like I distinctly remember mm-hmm. all the like AOL toolbar stuff, and there's the obvious You've Got Mail stuff and everything, but even when they went into the chat room stuff, just seeing all the like super fast like spammy stuff and all the dumbass screen names, like so she picks Diaper 911 because Viper 911 was taken, and so it seems like Diaper Emergency, which is pretty funny. And I do love that Fly Miami Bro 22 is who she's talking to and falling in love with. And all his stuff is about lifting weights and being a cool dude. And it's just that little Sam idiot from school. I thought that was super funny. But yeah, that brought me back to so much stuff of spending so many nights just on AIM and stuff. Mm-hmm. And like, I've told you before how it's like, I always found some comfort in, if it was late at night and I couldn't sleep,
right.
That I always found comfort and I would think about Walmart, believe it or not. And it gave me comfort.
Naturally.
Yeah, because I thought like, okay, I'm not alone. I know just, you know, a mile down the street or whatever, Walmart's there and people are awake and they're walking around mm-hmm. and it's not like this dead of night and I'm alone and it's scary or whatever. And that was replaced by AIM. Mm-hmm. So if I couldn't sleep, I would stay up. I would always, every single night, it was 10 o'clock Daily Show, 10:30 Letterman, 11:30 Conan. And then after Conan was done at 12:30, it's like,
so you watch Last Call with Carson Daly, like everyone else does.
I mean, that would be on the TV because nothing else was on, but that show was terrible. But
hey, wait a minute.
Yeah.
wait a minute. Okay. That show really isn't that bad.
Okay, it's just fluff.
It is fluff.
Between, like, Daily Show and Letterman and Conan, I was seeing, like, amazing comedy. And
I discovered a lot of really cool music from that show.
Fair enough. I'm sure. I'm not saying it doesn't have value. I'm just saying after, like, my three-hour block of, like, comedy I was obsessed with, it's like, oh, here comes Carson Daly. And then if I still couldn't sleep, it's like, okay, well, I hope people stay online. And, you know, everybody was in the same time zone. Obviously, right. I didn't know anyone outside of Kansas. And then I remember that feeling every night of, like, if it was, like, 2 o'clock in the morning, even if I wasn't actively talking to someone, when you hear the door shut of that last person mm-hmm. logging off and realizing, like, oh, I'm the last person awake. Mm-hmm. Crap. So, all right, back to thinking about Walmart, I guess. But yeah, it really brought me back to a lot of that stuff. And it's really interesting to me that it nailed on this nostalgia stuff for both of us, even though we are, you know, 7-8 years right. apart in age. What are we, 7 years apart?
Yeah, I think
I'm 34, so. You're 27.
I'm 27, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, 7 years. But yeah, I mean, we were both in school, mm-hmm. even, at, you know, I was more high school, you were younger in 2000. So like all of the stuff, like all the posters on the wall of the school, everything just brought me back to that because I haven't been inside a school in
right.
forever. And it's like, oh man, this brings me back so hard to that time period.
Well, for sure. And then I also think too, especially with schools, they're not really up to date as far as aesthetics, like when you look at those posters or the technology or whatever. So maybe we can both relate to this era because even though I was younger than you, our schools probably looked the same.
Oh, yeah. And like the fashion, I mean, the time period, the year was the same mm-hmm. despite where we were. And mm-hmm. so we saw tons, you know, Surge and Wu-Tang shirts and JNCOs and, oh, I love
wrestling shirts.
Yeah, there's that one kid who wore like Mankind and NWO shirts where I was so happy that it was mm-hmm. like it was even era specific because I hate it like in 40-Year-Old Virgin. No. Pain and Gain is when there's a GameCube controller on the floor and it's set in like 1995. And I was like, oh, that bugs me. And so like 2000, you would totally have the kid with the NWO and the Mankind. Well, NWO 2000 was kind of a watered down. I won't get into that.
There was that project that they did where they acted like different Spice Girls.
Yeah.
And they couldn't dance anymore because they didn't drink their milk or something. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
But I actually did a project exactly like that. I think I might have been a little younger, though, maybe in like third or fourth grade, where Samantha, this other girl from school, and I, we were on this project together, and we both dressed as Britney Spears and did a project on her. I don't know. I used to really like, you know, pop music and stuff when I was a kid.
Oh, I think a lot of people
yeah
do.
I think most kids do. And then, yeah. And then my brother showed me Tool, and then that started everything. So
how old were you when you started getting more into that stuff?
Well, we had like Napster and stuff like that, so rather than like, oh, sit down and listen to this entire record of a band you never heard, which is a tall order if you're mm-hmm. not familiar with the band,
yeah,
there'd just be little bite-sized, you know, clips of like, oh, here's one song from this album, one song from another. So I always heard my brothers playing these songs. And, you know, if you hear Tool, so like Sober, that's probably the song that everyone knows from Tool. That's an unbelievably catchy song. And then that would, you know, acclimate me to their sound. And then I would experiment with other stuff. But like pretty much like 90% of what I listen to today, I found in that era through my brothers, like Dead Can Dance, Tool, Into Eternity, like Decapitated, all like every band that I listen to now. It's so funny. It goes back to those Napster days.
Interesting, because I used Napster, but for me, it was definitely just a tool to like dive deeper into, like, you know, I'd buy a Hendrix Greatest Hits mm-hmm. album or a Zeppelin thing or whatever, and then like Napster is how I would like find more hidden gems and stuff. So right. It's not just Stairway to Heaven. I'm listening to Tangerine or 10 Years Gone mm-hmm. or whatever.
Did you make mixed CDs?
Oh, then? I still have them. I mean, they're in the closet here. Uh-huh. Like, I've got tons of them. That's why I hung on to them.
I'm sure your mixed CDs are very diverse.
You know what? There's a decent amount. I had some newer cool stuff, like basically just songs that wrestling introduced me mm-hmm. to. So like Walk by Pantera or Enter Sandman, stuff sure. like that. Wrestling and Tony Hawk games were the two things that kind of got me out of just the classic rock mm-hmm. Thing. Because it's like, oh, now I'm hearing about Rage Against the Machine and Motorhead and these bands that I wouldn't have heard through my dad. So
it's so interesting to like go back and look at when you or how you discovered things that were completely like the antithesis of what you were liking prior to that.
Totally.
It's so funny. Like, I remember when I think of GTA Vice City, which yeah. I played on the Xbox, it was like that bundle. It had GTA 3 and Vice City.
Remember that? Yeah, totally.
You could save a mixtape or a mix CD to the hard drive in the Xbox and then play yeah. that soundtrack instead yeah. of the soundtrack in the game. And everyone always talks about how amazing the Vice City soundtrack was. But
one of the best ever.
Because I listened to my mixtape the whole time, I always associate that game with these 12 songs that would just cycle through.
Huh.
And it was a lot of Alice in Chains and, like, I think Into Eternity and, like, some random stuff. It was just so inappropriate for that game.
Yeah.
But, I didn't think about stuff like that at the time.
I'm like that with, like, Burnout Paradise, because I learned in recent years that everyone associates that Avril Lavigne Girlfriend song with Burnout Paradise.
Uh-huh.
And I played the hell out of Burnout Paradise, but I didn't remember hearing that song in it like everyone else, and I realized I was doing the same Xbox thing where mm-hmm. I just ripped a bunch of classic rock stuff and listened to like Creedence while I was playing that.
That game has a lot of licensed music in it.
Yeah, it starts out with Paradise City by Guns N' Roses. Oh. So you hear that a lot. But yeah, tons of licensed
I'm sure
stuff.
That was expensive to license.
Yeah, yeah. But then
so that's probably why you heard it so much.
Oh yeah, yeah.
We're gonna milk this for all it's worth.
Yep. But some other like personalities on the show. Obviously Maya and Anna, it seems like they are kind of the heavy hitters of this show as far as like writing, starring, mm-hmm. like this seems like their baby for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But the Lonely Island guys produced it. That's actually how I heard of this show. Is I follow Jorma on Twitter because he directed MacGruber. So you know, and so if I hear him say like, "Hey, I did this thing and I'm proud of it," I'm going to pay attention. So he's like, "Hey, I directed a couple episodes of the show. It's a great show." And I was like, "Oh, cool. I'll check it out." Not intending to do it for Painting the Stream, mm-hmm. but we both like fell. You know, we really really liked it a lot from the get go. But also Richard Karn. Is from Home Improvement. Al Borland plays Maya's dad, which was so funny because we met Richard Karn at a garden show in Maryland with Danny O'Dwyer,
and we were there for the express purpose of meeting Richard Karn. We don't usually go to those types.
We drove past the sign that said "Meet Richard Karn" this weekend, and I started yelling about how we had to go, and like I think everyone kind of laughed, like "Haha, yeah, that'd be funny," and then I did not shut up about it until we went to this garden show, and so I convinced you all to go, and we met him, and so that led to more Richard Karn talk than I'd had in many years.
Yeah.
And so it was like, oh, what's he done lately? You know, I guess he's just doing these garden shows. So to see him pop up in this show, I was like, Richard Karn, he's getting work.
He was very likable in the show. And actually, so Maya's father in real life, I learned this from my brother, is a legendary jazz drummer, Peter Erskine. So I guess in the show, Richard Karn was a drummer too, but they talk about him being in a cover band, right?
Did they?
Yeah.
He was touring. Okay, it was a cover band.
But Peter Erskine, he was in Weather Report. You remember?
Oh, yeah.
We watched that documentary on Jaco Pastorius, which
is
a very good documentary. I think it's just called Jaco.
Yeah, it is.
If you're even remotely interested in jazz music and haven't seen it, I strongly recommend
it. Or even
it.
If you're not, like, I don't know anything about jazz, and I thought it was really good.
It was, it's an amazing, really sad, but also really amazing story about this genius, Jaco Pastorius. It added another layer of interest for me. Like, oh, she's... I mean, you have to be in some way impacted by having a father who's so, like, you know, into music.
Yeah. That's his life.
Yeah. So.
And you said Maya's mom was her actual mom, right?
Yeah, the mom in the show, that's her real mom.
She did a really good job.
Totally.
You know, like, sometimes people will do that type of casting and it's very obvious that they're not actors, mm-hmm. but, like, she seemed really good.
Yeah. And a lot of the conflict in the show isn't really that... bonkers, like it's nothing super serious happens beyond like there's a divorce.
Yeah.
But most of the conflict comes from just how dumb kids are. Like, obviously, Anna's parents getting divorced was very traumatic for her, and it created a kind of conflict between her and Anna, mainly just because Maya was so she couldn't really grasp how much this must have affected Anna. So just stuff like that. That's what a lot of just dumb kid choices.
And when it deals with more serious issues, it is not this like heavy-handed, like ham-fisted approach to it. Like they handle things about kids treating Maya different because mm-hmm. she's Asian, you know, and they deal with the divorce stuff. But it always feels just very kind of authentic and not being like sappy or like, hey, this is a serious emotional episode. Mm-hmm. It's just all handled very well within the context of the show. It all fits and it feels very realistic, you know?
Right. At the first episode, Anna and Maya say that they are going to do everything together.
Mm-hmm.
And as we watch the season, there's a lot of firsts for them. I feel like every episode is a different first.
Yeah.
And my favorite of them, I guess, was in the last episode when they're at prom and they get to, what would that be, first base with that guy? At the same time, he grabs their boobs.
I think that's second base.
Is that second base?
Yeah.
So he takes him into a closet, like a janitor closet, and like just very coldly, like no passion whatsoever.
It's like a doctor's examination.
Yeah, it was really funny to me. It made me think of like my first kiss, which was just like not even, like I don't even consider it my first kiss because it was just like a peck, but it was like playing spin the bottle in Christina's backyard with some dumbasses from school.
remember the first kiss in this where the kid, Brendan, who is Anna's boyfriend, is hilarious.
So
he's
good.
Just this personality deprived, awkward kid. And he just, during the Wild Things night, he like pulls her aside and tries to kiss her in the hallway. And like, he's just like darting his tongue in and out. Like,
it looked like when an anteater is trying to get food out of the little tunnels underground. It's just like his tongue is just going in and out and out.
And it's like an extreme close up because they have to, obviously, because they're not going to get a real 13-year-old to do this. So it's like a close up of these mouths and you just see this tongue. Just, it's so gross.
It's really nasty.
Yeah.
It was well done.
Yeah. This whole show, I mean, if it's not obvious, I think we both loved it. I think it really just did an amazing job of hitting all the right nostalgia points.
I can't recommend the show enough, especially if you're around Dan and my age.
Yeah.
It's strongly, strongly recommend it.
And not purely just because of nostalgia, because, you know, it does all that stuff right, but that's just kind of background stuff. Like the actual content of the show, nostalgia
aside,
really
funny.
Is so funny. It's so well acted by these two girls and are obviously acting out things that were close to them and based on real experiences.
Probably. Oh, even I should say even my parents enjoyed it, and they're obviously older, significantly older than me.
Yeah, it is. It's stellar. I would love to see a second season of this. Mm-hmm. So please, if this sounds interesting at all, check out Pen 15 on
please.
Hulu.
Please, yes. We want a second season for sure.
Yes, yes. So that'll be it for our discussion of Pen 15. But before we go, why don't we give the folks some suggestions?
Let's do it. You want to go first?
Yeah. Mine. Mm-hmm. I discovered something recently, which
What's
I hope
that?
To be having again soon. I like Indian food, but I was introduced to Indian food for the first time a few years ago, and the only thing I've had at Indian restaurants is chicken tikka masala.
It's a classic.
It's good. Great.
It's like the pad thai of Indian food, just like simple go-to, always going
to
be good.
And once I discover something that I like from like a new cuisine, I tend to stick with that. So I've just gotten that a million times and never even looked at anything else on the menu. But this time, we went out recently to a Indian place here on the Upper East Side. And I saw the description of this thing called, I'm probably going to pronounce this wrong, Malai Kofta Curry. And it was just like, oh, this is like fried Indian cheese balls inside this like curry sauce. And I was like, oh my God, this is just like fried cheese balls in delicious Indian curry. And I got that. And oh my God, you've seen me enjoy a lot of food.
So I was just going to say, there's like a scale that I know how much you're enjoying things. When you say like, oh, this is really good, I know you're not really too hot on it. If you say like, then I know, okay, he likes it. When you close your eyes after taking a first bite, that's how I know, like, okay, this is going to be a mainstay for Dan now.
Yeah, and every bite is just like, okay, this is incredible. I love that I'm eating this right now. This tastes great. Yes, Malai Kofta Curry. If you just want some cheese and some great Indian curry, if you see that on a menu, holy crap, get that.
Yeah.
It is great.
That's awesome.
How about you, Monk? What do you got?
So in keeping with the food theme, my suggestion this week is something that I've seen my whole life. I've seen it pop up in recipes. I've seen it on the store shelves. I never thought to buy it until recently. And what it is chipotle peppers in adobo sauce.
Oh.
You could get a can of it for like 69 cents. And you could put it in pretty much anything and it makes it a bajillion times better.
It's ice
like
cream?
Really, no. It's like really spicy and smoky. I've been like making it with eggs and like cauliflower rice or whatever. It just imparts such an amazing flavor and it's so cheap.
Huh.
And yeah, I strongly recommend using that if you, I don't know, like spicy stuff. If you're short on money, just a couple of eggs and some chipotle pepper and adobo sauce.
That sounds delicious.
There you go. Bonk approved meal right there.
Excellent. Well, before we go, we want to thank you folks out there. If you're just listening to this podcast, whether it's your first time or your, 52nd time, is that the episode we're on here?
It could be. And I'm sure for some people, this is the 52nd episode.
I'm sure we've had some mainstays throughout.
That's
awesome. So thank you for listening. And extra thank you to the folks who participate in listener support. For those who don't know, it is a thing. If you go to pantingthestream.com, it is an anchor feature where you can support us at $1, $5, or $10 a month. Or you can do it once and cancel. It's all really easy to do. It's all secure. And then we got a handful of supporters here. And, you know, being a small podcast here with a handful of supporters, we have the luxury of blessing every new supporter with a bonku. So Bonk, after our anime bonanza that we've done with My Hero Academia in the last couple weeks, we do have a couple new supporters. So let's go with the first one here. Do you have a new bonku?
I do. And I should say real quick, if you recently supported us, and this bonku isn't for you, please continue to listen because I guarantee I will get to a bonku for you. I can guarantee that.
We have covered every one of them. Sometimes there's a little delay because we got a few from the My Hero episodes. So we'll get through them in these next few weeks here.
In the event that you didn't get a Bonku, maybe email us, because yes. I was just thinking, you know, when we look at the list, there's a chance that someone might have supported us in the past and then stopped supporting us, and yes. that's why I didn't see their name on the list. So if that happened to you, please reach out, because I really want to give you a Bonku.
Yes.
I owe you a Bonku.
You now have a spreadsheet, so we are tracking the Bonkus. The Bonkus is becoming an industry here.
Yeah, well, it became kind of hard to keep track. Yeah. Okay, so this week I will be paying homage to our good friend Dylan. And that's D-I-L-L-O-N, a rather unusual spelling of the name. I would ask his parents why that spelling. I imagine his parents are very eccentric individuals.
You can have them email us at paintingthestream@gmail.com if you are Dylan's parents.
Now, Dylan, I just want to express how immensely grateful that Dan and I are to your contribution. You know, we go through many days of our lives where you don't have someone, you feel like you don't have someone patting you on the back or giving you an acknowledgement. It happens most days. And then there are little moments where we get an email that says you have a new supporter where it's like, man, Dylan, you don't know. Like, you just made my day better. It's not so much about the money. It's just about like, man, that's really cool that they felt it necessary to take time out of their day and do that for us.
It's a very nice gesture.
Yeah, it's really sweet. So, Dylan, this one's for you, bud. Put dill on tuna, and it will taste much better, as is Dylan to life.
Wow. That's a, man, you're getting good at these. That's great. Dylan, I hope you enjoyed your Bonku. Mm. Custom made for you.
Dill on tuna is very good. It amps it up.
Oh, boy.
Have you ever had that?
I think I've barely had tuna in my life, much less dill.
Grillman, my father, will make it with like he goes hard on his tuna. He does like celery, onions, dill. It's a whole menagerie of amazing flavors.
That seems intimidating.
Yeah, it's really good though.
Well, as we said, if you folks would like to email us for any reason, even if you're not Dylan's parents, you can email us at paintingthestream@gmail.com. You can give us suggestions, feedback, anything you want at PanTheStream on Twitter.
Yes.
And you can also follow that if you just want to know what we're watching the next week.
Exciting things are to come in this year.
Yes.
I can guarantee.
Yes. We will be getting back to My Hero Academia. Mm-hmm. And you may have seen that a much requested show has gotten its release date announced on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And so in a few months from now, we've got something we want to go pretty hard on, but that'll be later on.
Yes.
For now, we are done, and we will be back next week with another episode of Painting the Stream. I would like to thank Tom Monda for the theme music.
That's my bro.
That is your brother from Thank You Scientist. And Bonk, thank you so much for joining me each and every week.
Of course. It's my pleasure. I love you. I'm your wife. What can I say?
I love you, too, and we will be back with another podcast next week.
Bye.
Bye.